This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me is Koo Soo Chuang. Time now for Pressing Matters, the weekly show that comes on every Monday after the 9:30 a.m. news bulletin, where we go behind the news headlines and speak with journalists reporting on the news of the day. Our guest today, a stalwart of the show, P. Gunasekaran, an independent business analyst and, of course, a regular commentator here on Pressing Matters. So, Guna, we're going to be looking at some stories that you have written this past week on the MRT3.
Yeah, that's
so,
correct.
Yeah, real quick, set the stage for us. Give us an overview of the project and its potential pitfalls.
I think the major difference with this project, MRT3, is that there is no longer any project delivery partner. And so right now, what they want to do is to award this on a turnkey basis. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, and this is very unusual, they want the tenderers also to come up with the financing package for this, and this is a very large project. Now, they estimated it, I think, is about 40 to 50 billion. There are a fair number of implications as far as this is concerned. Okay. You know, first of all, it's a very, it's an 8-year moratorium period, you know, and it's usually unheard of to set that kind of a moratorium period for a open tender. And then you have a 30-year repayment period on top of that, you know, for financing. And both the financing package as well as the construction has been put into one package virtually. Yeah,
I mean, there's a lot of interesting things here. I mean, for the market commentators at least, the interesting thing was it was brought forward by two years as well. But it also means that the incumbent JV partners, which is the MMC Gamuda project delivery partner, which was in place for MRT1 and MRT2, are no longer, well, theoretically in the running for MRT3, which in a way is quite interesting from a governance perspective, because if they were involved as PDP for the third MRT, then, you know, where was the open, transparent process?
Yeah, in this case, I think what the project delivery partner, PDP, used to do is take the responsibility for on-time delivery of the project. Mm. So, which means they take overall charge of the project, and then they give out the various parcels. You know, they subtender it, and typically almost all of them to Malaysian companies.
Yeah. So insiders say that it's kind of like it's almost like free money, because they're given a 6% annual fee commission for delivering those timetables, but they don't actually get their hands dirty, as you say. Mm-hmm. They just give out parcels and subcontracts, right?
Well, some of the parts they did themselves. I think especially the tunneling projects where MMC Gamuda has got a substantial experience with the smart tunnel and so on.
So what are we reading into this then? So given that this is now awarded on a turnkey basis, as opposed to what happened with MRT1, MRT2, you had MMC Corp getting it as they were the PDPs, right? So what are we reading into this? Is this because of perhaps pressure on the fiscal coffers, or is this, you know, perhaps something that MMC Gamuda cannot take on anymore? Like, what are we inferring from this?
All right. I think one cannot help but look at compare it with the East Coast Rail project, which was recently awarded without any tender at a project cost of ringgit 55 billion. So this one has got a 7-year moratorium, 25-year financing, 85% financed, you know. So almost very similar kind of terms. And this went to a China company. You know? So the only people who really are in a position to give this kind of long-term financing looks like the China companies, which very often are also state-owned companies. So to my mind, when I look at it, this seems to be a tender which is actually designed to make it successful for the China companies to actually take over.
What if we turn this on the head? What if we say that the government, by giving it to a consortium, whether it's Chinese or Japanese or whether it's American, they can come up and fulfill this criteria, takes the financial burden off the Malaysian government? Because as you say, you know, Malaysia does not have to pay this loan back for the next 8 years, and it's got another 30 years to repay it. So, I mean, don't forget, MMC Gamuda was the one who built the you know, the smart tunnel. They also invested heavily in tunnel boring machines for MRT 1 and MRT 2. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of modifications to the TBMs to build out, you know, because basically the ground underneath the Klang Valley is made up of very different components. One is hard limestone, the other one is amorphous rock. And they adapted this machine. So they've got these investments in these huge TBMs, right? So, I mean, conceivably, Malaysian parties can still take part in MRT 3. Whether it's, if not main con, at least
they
one of the major
but the amount of Malaysian participation may be very small as a result. No? Because if you look at the ECRL project, the East Coast Rail Link, 70% will be taken care of China by China, and only 30% will be given to local contractors.
And they've got their TBMs as well, right? Yeah, the Chinese.
Yep. And then on
the East
top
Coast
of that,
it's not on ground. Though. It's all above ground.
It's all above ground. There will be tunneling portions through hillsides. It's also quite a complex project. There will be some tunneling. Yes.
Yeah, insiders say that also the environmental impact to the to rivers and forest reserves is quite extravagant because it's going through I think something like 9 rivers and 12 jungles or something, and it'll just be decimating everything in sight. So that's another concern because I mean insiders say that work has really begun.
In the case of the ECRL project, there is also a huge question about viability or whether the project is needed. In this case, MRT, at least this is a project which is actually in the planning stage, and it's essential to complete the MRT system in KL.
Right. Yeah, Guna, I was talking I had lunch with one of the building industry construction type people, and I said that, does Malaysia really need an East Coast Rail Link? And actually, I was quite surprised because he said the answer was yes. Mm. And the issue really is competition from Thailand, right? Because if they go ahead and build the canal in the Kra of Isthmus, across Isthmus Kra, right?
Yeah.
There's about 150 kilometers of land, which a little ribbon of canal, which if they go through and build it, it's going to cost like $100 billion. But if they build it, that puts Malaysia out of business and puts Singapore out of business. So by getting the Chinese in, as potentially Chinese as main con, and then getting them to use this link, it kind of like mitigates the possibility of a Kra of Isthmus a disruption.
But there is no commitment from China to take to actually put any of their cargo traffic through this. You know? So you are going ahead with the project.
But if the Chinese are given it, the Chinese are given it, then obviously they've got some skin in the game because
they don't have an equity venture in the project. All they are doing is they are constructing it for you, for which you pay them at the end of the day.
But we don't know the commercial terms yet, right?
There is no commitment actually. I mean, no commitment has been announced whereby China will undertake to put your cargo through there.
Right. So on that point then, that sets the MRT3 apart from the ECRL, so we definitely need it, right? That's the base case. And generally speaking, we would use it. Okay?
Yes.
So with that factor taken out, so it's now a question really about the financing aspect, right? So is that where the potential pitfalls lie?
Yes. Okay. The thing is, when you put the financing together with the construction, then what happens is because the financing terms are very good, you may compromise on the construction kind of things. You know? So in some of the projects that China has done overseas and some of the projects they are doing here, they also bring in their own labor. You know? I think Malaysia Kini reported extensively on a sort of like a village in Kuantan, which was populated mainly by Chinese laborers, so to speak, who were working on the project there. You know? And these people don't even come out from that entire place. You do not know how many hours they work and so on. So these kind of control mechanisms, the control mechanisms over these people will be lax. You know? What kind of labor are you using?
Right. Certainly plenty of legs to this discussion. We got to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue speaking to P. Gunasegaram, who is an independent business analyst, as we take a closer look at the MRT3 project. You're listening to Pressing Matters right here on BFM 89.9. And you're tuned in to Pressing Matters, our weekly show here on The Morning Run, where we go behind the news headlines. This morning, we are pleased to have P. Gunasegaran, an independent business analyst who has written quite a bit on the MRT3. Now, Guna, in the first half of this program, we spoke about some of the risks associated with, and risk and concerns, right, associated with the MRT3 project. You made some connections with, or some similarities between the East ECRL and MRT3. Let's begin. Let's also talk about some of the other pockets of risks that can be associated with this MRT3.
Okay. I think the tender requires that the financing be either in renminbi, ringgit, yen, US dollar, euro. These are the five financing options. So if it is anything but a ringgit financing, then you incur foreign exchange risk. Now, so similarly, interest rate risk as well. You know, the interest rates can be quite different for different currencies. So if you are earning in ringgit and everything is in ringgit, it might be a lot more preferable to take ringgit financing for these projects. We have been burned before by taking other currencies for the financing of the project, especially in the 80s when we went for low interest rate Japanese yen loans. And then the yen appreciated by quite a bit during that period, and we took a huge hit as a result. So also when you have easy financing, you have this, financial vetting becomes very poor. The running of government finances becomes lax because these are things which are being financed off balance sheet, even though there's a government guarantee. It's almost like a 1MDB kind of a situation developing in terms of governance. So whereas if it is a government bond, if it's an outright government bond, it comes on the balance sheet of the government. So, it becomes a bit more transparent in terms of the governance matters.
When it comes to a turnkey project like this, though, I mean, what is the risk of the contractor, whoever it may be, for example, skimming on costs, but then having the, securing the knowledge that in 8 years' time, the debt becomes due, and then they, basically they get paid the project value over the next 30 years. It's almost like an FD, right? It's almost like a interest-bearing instrument. So, for example, if they say that the MRT3 is going to cost 40 billion ringgit, they might do it because they do it all internally, right? If China does it, it's all their own workers, their own equipment, their own labor, their own that, right?
But if they bring
it in at a 25 billion ringgit cost, then 15 billion is ice cream for them, isn't it?
Yeah.
Plus
the
interest rate of, 3.25% if you follow the Exim China model, right?
Yeah. You see, in this case here, if it is a large project, you want a lot of it to be locally generated. You don't want a project which is awarded, say, for instance, if it goes to China, it's being built by Chinese labor. Chinese equipment comes in, Chinese expertise. There's no provision for transfer of technology and so on and so forth. So eventually what happens, you have a very huge outflow in terms of the construction cost. It may not be now because of the easy financing, but it will be deferred and it will happen in the future. And because of the interest rate cost, foreign exchange rates, the time taken over which the repayment is made, you might end up paying as much as four times, the original project cost.
Right. But what about, at the fundamental level, because, again, MRT3, the demand is very clear-cut, but, given all those risks that you outlined there, isn't it better, so to speak, to offload those risks to a foreign guy as opposed to what you suggest, keeping it all domestic?
Risk will not be offloaded to a foreign guy because, I think almost certainly this will require a government guarantee. So the government will be obliged to repay the loan in the event that MRT Corp, which owns the project, cannot.
Right, so but it's one step risk, removed, right? It's one step removed as opposed to coughing up the money.
But the risk is the risk is borne by the government still. So the other thing is, okay, in the event that Malaysia is not able to pay off, then what happens? You have a situation in Sri Lanka where a similar situation over a port, for instance. So Sri Lanka has allocated quite a large chunk of land. I can't remember exactly how much it is as 99-year lease to China. So you may end up paying a lot if you cannot repay. So the person who undertakes the project, the person who constructs the project and finances the project, in this case, does not take the risk. China has got no equity stake in the project.
Okay, so this is the classic pound of flesh syndrome, right? Yes. Because if you can't get paid back, then you come in and you take what you think is yours.
Yes.
So in Malaysia's case, what are the possibilities? What kind of pound of flesh do we have to yield for potential default?
I think our economy is still strong enough to pay that, but it will not be without a cost now.
So the cost could be inflated, but what if Malaysia cannot pay back one day? I guess part of the justification is that Malaysia can't afford it anyway, so that's why they've given it to a turnkey contractor, right? So what if they can't pay one day? For whatever reason, what happens then?
The government guarantee kicks in?
So I think if they can't pay, which I must say is a very very unlikely situation, if they can't pay, then you may have to say maybe assign some land to them or allow them to use the facilities at a cheaper rate, or to take over the facilities, or something like that, you know? Which is a situation which is not very desirable. And also remember, this kind of like turnkey projects and easy financing, it's very, very prone to abuse through corruption and patronage. You know, so if you look at, say, China's model in other countries, they have been using this kind of a thing to increase their influence in countries like Africa, you know, in Pakistan, in Sri Lanka, you know, and they are doing it through the One Belt, One Road project, you know, where they have committed to provide infrastructure financing for a lot of countries across the world. You know? So it's a very complex thing, and I think we need to make sure that we do not get too much in debt to one country in the process of developing our infrastructure.
Well, the corollary or the opposite of that would have been the TPPA, right? Because the TPPA was essentially an American pact which excluded China, right? It's only America and its 50 best friends.
Yeah.
So it's either the Americans or the Chinese that you get in bed with. And in this case, with Trump's ascension.
So maybe we need to play more of a balancing game as a smaller, you know,
right?
Country.
Yeah, so you need to play both sides.
Yeah, but I think, you know, the point that I would like to make actually is that, okay, there are two things here. One is the financing. One is the construction of the project. So if you want to do the best thing, then it would be to separate the two. See? So you have one package for the construction. If the China companies give you the best package for construction, fine, take it. But you have to maybe specify like 51% of your project cost will be accounted for by Malaysian companies, or 70% or 65%, and give preference for those who give a higher percentage of Malaysian content. And then you have a separate financing package and ask people to tender for the financing package. So that way, there is no conflict of interest between the construction and the financing. So if you do that, then you are safe.
Yeah, because if it's all held within the same turnkey, then obviously they can do all kinds of funny, funny things behind the veil, right?
Yeah. And we have had great experience in long-term financing through Sukuk bonds and things like that.
Right.
So do it the right way. The government can assume the financing directly. That way, there is a check and balance on the government as well.
But then, which brings us full circle, right? The fact that they're choosing not to go down, well, perhaps not to go down the Dana Infra route, right? Raising funds via Sukuk, but instead having these guys do it. You know?
So it raises a lot of suspicion. I mean, is this being done to cover a hole in one MDB, for instance, you know? So those kind of questions, I mean, the suspicion is out there.
So MRT3 is the third and, I think, final planned stage for the KV MRT line, right?
Yeah.
But there's also a school of thought which says that the MRT cannot stop here. It's got to keep on going to MRT4, MRT5, MRT6 because, I mean, if you look at the most developed cities in the world, they've got at least a dozen, if not two, like Tokyo and the UK and London, the Tube and the JRT in Tokyo. There's at least two dozen lines in Japan, in Tokyo, right?
This is, I think, for the first overall phase of the MRT, you know? So what they have planned ahead for this. So there's no planning behind MRT3 at the moment.
Yeah, like your story says, so far it's been 100 billion ringgit if you combine all three. But in the larger scheme of things, it's not a lot. It's only about, at these current rates, it's only about $23 billion, which is not a lot.
So then moving forward with potential projects in mind with a few minutes, few seconds that we have left. So you're saying turnkey, you know, perhaps that model has to be tweaked. Perhaps
there's nothing wrong with turnkey. You know, maybe you can do
turnkey. But it's the structure of it.
But in this case, the turnkey is designated in such a way that it excludes almost all local, if not all local contractors. If you have built one tunnel here, you can build another tunnel there. You don't have to specify that you must have had two tunnels and it must be this big and so on and so forth, you know. So the entire tender seems to be designed to exclude Malaysian contractors, which is the most ridiculous thing.
I bet we'll be speaking about this for quite a while, if not with MRT3s, and certainly for 4, 5, 6, and it's, you know, who knows where this will lead to. Thank you, Guna, so much for joining us today. Always a pleasure to have you on the show.
That was
P. Gunasekaran, Independent Business Analyst, right here on Pressing Matters, and you're tuned in to BFM 89.9. Stay tuned for the 10 o'clock news bulletin that's coming up in just a bit.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.